The MMQB podcast is brought to you by Harry's Razors. Superior razors ship straight to your door at half the drugstore price. Get $5 off your first order with the code THEMMQB at harrys.com. And by FanDuel. Now that baseball is back, you can try the fun and competition of daily fantasy risk-free for up to $10. Go to FanDuel.com and enter the code THEMMQB. Welcome to the MMQB podcast. He is Andy Benoit, calling in from Boise. I am Gary Grambling here in New York, sharing the podcast room with our producer, Alex Abnos. Special thanks, as always, to Jeff Irwin, our researcher out there, shaking his head every time we butcher his facts and figures that he provides for us so kindly. You came to the right place today. This is going to be a special MMQB draft podcast. Not to be confused with the very special MMQB draft podcast coming up later in draft season here, when we'll have Peter King swing in and Jenny Brentis, Robert Klemko, Emily Kaplan, and Andy will all kind of dump out all their draft notebooks and share all of their knowledge. This is also not to be confused with the MMQB podcast after school special, in which Andy and I will warn teens about the dangers of drinking and dancing and swearing. But what Andy and I are going to do today is we're going to unveil the top 10 picks of our mock draft. We'll do the entire first round in three segments here. Andy's going to kind of play the role of GM, whereas I will, I guess, be director of scouting or whatever you want to call it. Andy's going to provide team needs. I will provide the prospects, and we will settle on a pick for each team. But before we get to that, a couple of orders of business, starting with the opening night rematch. Carolina going to Denver. Andy, if you had to pick that game right now, who are you picking and why?
No, we're not doing this. We're not doing that. Come on, Gary. We don't want to be those guys that do the schedule stuff.
Andy, I'm in debt. I need a big win here. I need to gamble on this game. Yeah. Who's going to win?
I can't. Everybody picked Carolina before the Super Bowl last year because they matched up so much better. I don't know on that kind of thing, though. But isn't it? Did you find it a little bit odd? And we're not going to talk much more schedule, I hope, because it's the way the NFL schedule set up. Everybody's going to play everybody of importance at some point in the season anyway. I mean, the schedule kind of, I don't like the term, it is what it is, but that's the schedule for you. I was a little surprised, though, that they put this rematch game as the opener, because I remember a few years ago they had Denver and Seattle, and they could have done the rematch opener, and instead they chose, I believe it was Seattle Green Bay in week one, and they saved Denver Seattle for week three. So you still got the Super Bowl rematch hype, but you also got the inherent hype of the opener. The opener is going to get viewers no matter what. So why would you burn the Super Bowl rematch in that game when the Super Bowl rematch would have gotten extra viewers two or three weeks later? You see what I'm saying?
My guess, and this is based on no actual knowledge, but my guess is they don't want Carolina to get sort of lost in the shuffle here. And, you know, they're not a big market team. The NFC South tends to get overlooked overall. I think they want to pump up Cam Newton as much as they possibly can. I think he's sort of the next face of the league, if you will. Once Peyton obviously has cycled out, Tom Brady will cycle out. Well, one day, probably.
Yeah,
but I think they want Cam Newton out front and center, and I think they also want to give him a chance to sort of make up for sort of the impression he left at the end of last year, which, you know, fairly or unfairly, I think they want to sort of wash that taste out of everyone's mouth.
Yeah, I could see that. The other thing I thought is maybe because the Super Bowl rematch, a lot of people who aren't football fans watch the Super Bowl, as we know. Maybe they feel they can scrape up 10% of those non-football fans to watch the opening rematch because it's the rematch and it's familiar to those people, and they're trying to accumulate new fans that way or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. These games all get played, and the schedules were predetermined as far as who you play anyway. So I'm not too worried about it, but it'll be for those opening nights. That Thursday night game was a brilliant idea they came up with about 10 years ago now to kick off the season. That's always a blast.
I actually have some ideas about the opening night game. We won't talk about them today. I I have a lot of problems with the NFL schedule and how they build it out. And I have some brilliant ideas.
Well, give us an example of one.
It's all centered around, I hate Thursday night football. And I think everyone sort of has a knee-jerk reaction. Like, oh, I hate Thursday night football. It messes up my fantasy team. Messes up my pick'em pool at work. And I just hate it because the turnaround's too quick and you end up with teams not performing up to the up to their actual ceiling, their ability, and it's impossible. And you have to do you have this sort of truncated playbook, and it's unfair to have teams turning around every week in that primetime game. So I think they should go back to 18 or I'd have to do the math out, either 18 or 19 weeks. They've never had 19 weeks regular season, but 18 week regular season or 19 week regular season. And build in two bye weeks and make sure everyone has a bye week going into their Thursday night game. If you're going to have,
yeah, I agree with that.
Which would require,
that could be their way to get rid of the fourth preseason game that they seem to no longer be able to stomach or they can't keep a straight face about anymore when selling tickets for.
It would. I think the only way you could do it, you'd have to have an opening night doubleheader, because you wouldn't. Otherwise, you'd have a week two, assuming you didn't have a rematch between week one and week two, which would obviously be ridiculous. That week two Thursday night game would be two teams that played on Sunday, unless you just took two of the teams that played the previous Thursday and then had them play the next Thursday.
They could figure that kind of thing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. Peter writes 3,000 words on how they figure that thing out every year. I mean, they got a whole team that does it, of people who are much smarter than I am, so... but we'll move on. Obviously the monster news was the number one overall pick has been traded, which you already knew unless you're, coming out of a coma. And if you're coming out of a coma, I'm very sorry to hear it. I hope you're going to be all right. But, if you are, the Los Angeles Rams have indeed acquired the first overall pick for a wealth of picks and future picks, first rounder this year, 15th overall, next year's first rounder, a bunch of second and third rounders. I guess my first question to you, Andy, were you shocked that the number one pick actually got moved?
No, I wasn't. It makes sense for both teams involved here. And I think this really changes the narrative around the Rams. I mean, look at for a minute, imagine you're, for example, Rob Boris, all right, who is your tight end coach last year. He got promoted when Frank Cignetti was fired midseason from offensive coordinator post. Rob Boris gets promoted to offensive coordinator, play caller, and so now he's running the offense. He's in St. Louis playing, calling plays in front of 35,000 people with no quarterback, no wide receivers, and an exciting running back but an okay offensive line. Now flash forward to what's going to be in September, come September week one or whenever the Rams open at home, and you're Rob Boris still, and you're calling plays with a second-year superstar running back, the number one overall drafted quarterback, and you're in the L.A. market. So now you've got 100,000 people at your game, or is the 20 times more watching on TV. The Rams all of a sudden have transformed into a marquee team. I'm not saying they're going to win 12 games, but for all intents and purposes, they've got the marquee pieces all with this one trade. And I thought it was also, from a football standpoint, the completely right move for them. It's a matter of who they take from there, and I have opinions on that. But I think this makes total sense for them. In Tennessee, it makes even more sense because they have multiple needs, and none of them were top-of-the-draft-type specific needs.
Yeah, I mean, you just, you know, everyone immediately points to the RG3 trade, and you know, the hypothesis was a deal like that would never happen at the top of the draft again. You know, I actually have discussed this with my brother quite a few times. If you were to take every roster in the league and take away the quarterbacks and just say who has the best non-quarterback roster, my brother and I always agree the Bengals have the best roster, mm-hmm. sans quarterback. I think the Rams are up there, though. I mean, if you're winning eight games every year with you know, Case Keenum and Nick Foles and Austin Davis and Sam Bradford playing on crutches, I mean, it seems like they're pretty, you know, every team has holes. You can look at any roster and say, oh, they could use this, they could use this. Rams, obviously, they need receivers. I mean, they haven't had a receiver since, I don't know, Flipper Anderson or so. But when you look at the Rams roster.
Maybe Torrey Holt, but I get what you're saying.
Torrey Holt was all right. He was no Flipper Anderson, but he was pretty good. When you look at the Rams roster, though, I mean, they're pretty set outside of quarterback, it would seem.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, so let's play the other side of it. First of all, let's talk about the quarterback because it kind of pertains to the roster. I hear reports that they actually want Jared Goff, mm-hmm. and if a team took Jared Goff number one overall, I have a problem with that. You and I know, Gary, I've been lucky enough to spend time with both these guys recently, so actually have studied the quarterbacks this year, at least those two, and Goff, it strikes me as having all the stuff you look for. Now, he has a little bit of a learning curve because he played in a wide-open offense that had a lot of things just done by default. To put it on the flip side, Carson Wentz, on the other hand, was responsible for the protections and responsible for all pre-snap adjustments, a lot of audibles, often called run plays, called the game. At times, they just call a formation and let him get up to the line of scrimmage and then determine the play from there. Carson Wentz is ahead of Goff in terms of just pure pro readiness.
Oh, really?
And I think Goff, I get that, okay, we want Goff. I don't believe it, though. I think they want Wentz because Wentz, stylistically, because of the pro readiness, part A, but part B, stylistically, he fits their mold there in Los Angeles. He played in a run-based offense with a pro-style passing game built out of the running formations. He hasn't played in these spread-type systems. The Rams are built to be a run-based offense, even if they're taking a QB number one overall. Yeah. They have Todd Gurley. They have a beefy, big offensive line that they've clearly invested in deliberately. And I think Wentz, not only do they have a great quarterback prospect there available, but they have one who stylistically immediately fits the way the rest of the team is constructed.
Yeah.
So I would be shocked if they do take Goff. If they do, I'm not going to rip them because they've done the research and however much time I think I've spent with these guys, which is about an hour and 10 minutes each, they've probably spent 10 times that much. Plus, they know what they need more than I know. And Goff's a great player. I think Wentz is just such a perfect fit for what they want to do, though.
So I'm going to ask you two things, and we'll get into more Wentz versus Goff, because you do know those guys. I would even say intimately you know those guys at this point. I think you know them as well as anyone in the industry. You know, one of the theories floated out there was, is this an ownership move? And that was sort of, you know, some of the driving force behind that was the Rams coming out and saying, we don't know who we're going to take. We're still figuring out which guy we like more, which would seem to be, you know, if your football guys are making that decision to go up to number one, you figure they have a guy in mind. I mean, you figure they're not going to come back and sort of be like, you know, we didn't care for either guy. We're just going to take Joey Bosa, you know, and just get some more depth on the defensive line. But do you think this was fueled at all by ownership? And do you think, I don't know, do you believe them when they say they have not settled on either quarterback?
I don't know if I believe that or not. I don't really listen. I don't even think if I believe it or bother to deliberate about it, because I don't listen to what any teams say at this time of year. I mean, in March, Les Snead, the Rams GM, was saying Case Keenum is our starter, and he said a few weeks later there are other important positions besides quarterback, and all that's technically true, and it means nothing at this point, and he probably knew that they were trying to make this trade when he said that, and why would he ever indicate anything differently?
Mm-hmm.
So it does the Rams no good to say who they want to take, and the NFL probably prefers that they don't for draft hype, so shows like this keep talking about it. So I don't mind. And if it is ownership, I mean, nobody's going to care what you gave up to get the quarterback if the quarterback pans out. Nobody talked about the King's ransom that was traded away to acquire RG3. That did not come up until RG3 started face planting and failing to perform. So the quarterback, it's not going to matter. You can't overpay for a franchise quarterback in the NFL. It's a matter of if you get and draft the right guy. But the trade itself and the idea of moving up, whether it's ownership's idea or the GM or Jeff Fisher's, irrelevant, because this team badly needed a quarterback and they have all the other pieces in place for the most part. They're not as talented as they were last year, but they've got the pieces in place. So I don't think there's much discussion otherwise.
No, I agree. And I've seen some stuff out there where people make the argument like, oh, you know, look at Aaron Rodgers, went 24th overall. Tom Brady was a 6th-round pick.
I hate that Brady argument, by the way. I hate that one. That's such an anomaly. Name one other 6th-round pick. I can name one other and Brady, keep in mind, that was 15 years ago now. Tony Romo's the only one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
He was undrafted. Who got taken that low. And then the only other one after that would be Russell Wilson, who was a 3rd-round pick. The idea that, oh, you can find a quarterback, these guys don't look properly, that's such garbage. And there are plenty of top 5 quarterbacks who have panned out just fine.
Yeah. No, if you see that guy at the top and you think he's your guy, go get him. I mean, you can't sit back here and say, you know, we're going to take, 3 second-tier prospects over the course of the draft and sort of hope one of those lottery tickets that we scratch comes to fruition. I mean, you can do that in the NBA. You can do that with some of the more sort of, I don't know, less cerebral positions in the NFL, I think. You can't do that with a quarterback, though. If you think your guy is out there, you got to go get him.
Yeah, I agree full-heartedly.
Well, with that, we're going to come back. We're going to start our special draft presentation, the top 10 of our mock draft. Stick around. We'll be back in 30 seconds. Spring is here, and whether you're catching a game, relaxing at the beach, or just going to work, it's time to ditch the winter scruff and feel the sun on your face with a smooth shave by Harry's Razors. With Harry's, you not only get a close, comfortable shave, you get high-quality, German-engineered blades for half the price you're used to. And Andy, I'm going to pull you into this real quick. They sent you some Harry's razors, and I stole them. And I used them, I stole them. Your name was on it, and I said, you know, how could we possibly ship something from New York to Idaho in this day and age? So I took them home, testing them out right before my anniversary the other day, and it's great shave, close shave. Harry's gives you factory direct prices. They cut out the middleman and ship their products right to your door. Harry's starter set is the best option for new customers and a great deal. For just $15, you get a razor handle, foaming shave gel, and 3 of Harry's 5 blade German engineered razors. Plus, for listeners of this show, Harry's is giving you $5 off your first purchase with the promo code the MMQB. Go to harrys.com right now. That's harrys.com. And make sure you use the code THEMMQB at checkout to let them know who sent you. All right, Andy, we are ready to start mocking here.
Awesome.
The mock cast, the pod mock, whatever you want to call it. So again, the way we're going to do it, Andy's going to provide team needs for each of these teams, and I will provide the prospects, and I guess together we will settle on who each team is going to take. We'll go through the top 10 in this show, and we'll start Los Angeles Rams on the clock. Andy, what are we looking at here? We're looking at the quarterbacks.
Well, I think we're looking at Carson Wentz. And so for other team needs with the Rams, wide receiver, regardless of who you take, is still a need. Kenny Britt does not have – there were coaches that told me this offseason they game planned around the idea of Kenny Britt having only 2 routes on his tree. That would be a go route and then a deep stop route, which is like a go route. All of a sudden you stop at the top or after 20 yards. Kenny Britt can run straight and back, and that's about it. And he's their number one receiver. Tavon Austin has limitations outside the slot. He's kind of a gadget player. Brian Quick hasn't posted the production for a variety of reasons. He looks good at times, but it's been 4 years now. So they need a wide receiver. They don't necessarily need the next Randy Moss, because they can, if they're going to be a run-based offense, they can scheme a lot of their passing game. They can use play action. They can win through formations and pre-snap adjustments. If you have the next Randy Moss, all the more power to you. But I think a wide receiver in the middle rounds, and the defense isn't as deep this year because they lost some guys. So if they want to restock on defense, I would understand that as well. They need maybe a linebacker, someone to replace Janoris Jenkins. They've got the guys, but maybe some depth there would help them. But if we're talking first round, which I guess we kind of are, right?
I was going to say, because
we already talked about that. I think Carson Wentz.
I have some bad news for you, Rams GM / owner / head coach. I'm not sure exactly who you are in this scenario, but Rams don't have another pick until 110 will be their second pick of this draft. And obviously they can shuffle around, trade whatever left if they feel a dire need to move up maybe late 2 or 3 or something like that. But so something you mentioned before that I wanted to give you a chance to elaborate on a little bit, because I think the assumption when you're looking at Wentz and Goff is Wentz is the FCS guy. Lower level of play, obviously, you'd think the learning curve would be a little steeper, whereas Goff is the, you know, he's the Pac-12, the prestige program quarterback. You think Wentz is more pro-ready, though. And again, you've not only studied these guys on tape, you spent significant time with both guys now. You can see Andy's Jared Goff piece up on our site right now. Carson Wentz will come up later in draft season. But why do you think Wentz is more pro-ready? That's something that sort of caught my attention.
Yeah, because he comes from the smaller school. But let's first address the smaller school thing in order to have the rest of the conversation. We agree the FCS, it's smaller. We all know that. North Dakota State. But what do we do with that? Now that we know that information, what do we do? Do we say he can't, well, he can't play, or we is a big risk? Because, I mean, okay, his competition's lower, but how does that relate to projecting someone to the NFL? Because Goff's competition was also significantly lower, because only about 1% of college players become meaningful NFL players.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I know, I get what you say. I think it's I was talking about this with Greg Cosell at NFL Films the other day, wanting to hear what he thought about these quarterbacks. And we both came to the conclusion that it's a valid discussion, the idea of who Wentz play, you know, the competition he played against. It's a valid discussion, but how do you have the discussion? How do you actually enact it? Because we're just guessing at this point. I mean, Joe Flacco had lower competition. He started right away and he made the playoffs his first 5 or 6 years. So I don't know what that means. The other part of this is I'm not into the idea of he's a winner. You know, the guy's a winner. I think that's a completely empty phrase that people who don't understand football use when an average quarterback wins a wild card game. So all of a sudden he's a winner now, because we don't know how he actually did it or how the team did it. So I don't like he's a winner. Having said that, at North Dakota State, Wentz was there 5 years, and they won 5 national championships. He didn't play in all 5 of those years. He was the main guy for 2 of them. But I think, to me, that also has to be taken into consideration. Yeah, it was lower competition, but they owned that lower competition. And I just like there's something about that. And there's a pride around that organization there, North Dakota State, too. There's a sense of ownership with it. And Wentz talking to him was like the conversation I had football wise was like any conversation I've had with an NFL coach, head coach,
really,
coordinator, you name it. It was it was almost intimidating. I mean, he had an answer for everything. He had variations of answers and what it could mean if they did this and they did that. And here's why I did this. And that doesn't mean he was perfect. He made bad decisions in games, but the baseline knowledge was unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, we should point out, I mean, North Dakota State is they're upper echelon FCS. I mean, they could probably, you know, stick him in the Sun Belt or the MAC. You know, they could compete in those divisions. I think they beat Kansas State a couple years ago, if I remember correctly, though.
Yeah.
It might just be.
Well, I think I heard when I was up there, and I could be wrong, I think the last 6 FBS schools that they've played, they won. They beat them. They're not beating the Illinois or something, or Ohio State, or these bigger conference teams. But your point has been proven before. Yes.
And I guess one other thing I'd ask you, you know, I don't know a lot about Rob Boris. I know he was the Rams tight ends coach before this. I noticed you almost slipped into St. Louis before, and I almost did just then, and that's going to take a while. What kind of offense is he going to run for LA, and what it doesn't matter? Is one of these guys you know, a better fit with what Boris would presumably want to do?
Yeah, I think Wentz is the better fit with Boris because of Wentz's experience in a balanced run-based offense. And when we say run-based, that doesn't mean he's really good at handing the ball off. That means that he is good at understanding run adjustments before the snap, getting him in and out of the right run plays, kind of like what Peyton Manning would do.
Yeah, yeah.
It also means he's used to playing with two tight ends on the field, which is something I think Boris definitely will want to do. It's used to being flexible with formations, because if you have two tight ends or two backs and you can split out wide and make those guys flex players, which they had at North Dakota State, mm-hmm. then you have a wider playbook that you're operating from. So run-based offense is a positive thing. They're not hiding the quarterback. It's almost the opposite of that, run-oriented offense. And also the ability to make throws out of heavier formations, out of a tight end and a fullback in the backfield, and you drop back to throw. That's a different type of throw. There's fewer eligible receivers. You have to set your protection differently because there's more bodies blocking, which means there's going to be more guys likely to rush. It's just a lot more responsibility that goes in with it versus an air raid offense like what they ran at Cal, where they're snapping the ball as quickly as possible. They're spread out wide and the ball's out within 1 or 2 seconds. That's fine. That's legit football. That's how the people play now.
Yeah.
That said, the quarterback has inherently less responsibility with that. He doesn't have as much verbiage. He doesn't have the same pre-snap adjustments. So Goff can do those things, but he wasn't forced to do them snap after snap. So he's going to have some learning to do. Wentz was forced to do them snap after snap, and I think that's the way Los Angeles is going to want to play. They're going to want to still be a running type offense. Keep in mind, they have Todd Gurley.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting on Wentz. I think that's changing some perceptions of you know, people who maybe didn't know him as well as, you know, Goff, since obviously, you know, not a whole lot of North Dakota State games coming up on ABC at 8 p.m. during the
right
last fall. All right, so we'll just go ahead. Los Angeles Rams, Carson Wentz. Moving on, number 2 pick, Cleveland Browns. So, yeah, Andy, what do the Browns need?
Same thing that the Rams needed, and I think they'll take the one who's left. I think they take the next quarterback standing. Would you agree?
Yeah, the Browns, I think, are a little bit of a longer-term rebuild. Which I guess is logical, since the Rams traded up from the 15th spot. They had a better record last year, but boy, I don't know. Do you even? So obviously we're talking about Jared Goff to the Browns at this point. Do you put him out there next year with the team they built there?
That's a good question, and that is a valid one, because there have been quarterbacks that have been, I mean, Robert Mays wrote for us his last piece that the Browns once did that with Tim Couch, and there are mm-hmm. guys in the NFL, Bruce Arians comes to mind, who believe that ruined Tim Couch.
Yep.
Or some think that ruined David Carr years ago. So I don't know. Now, Goff was thrown to the hounds as a freshman at Cal, and they went 1-12, and he got sacked 1,000 times and took a beating, but he came out of that okay, you know, and some people like that. I mean, remember Jay Cutler was that way at Vanderbilt. He took a beating, they lost a bunch, and the guy still improved and came out and became a good prospect as a quarterback, a pro quarterback. There's something to be admired about that. Troy Aikman got beat around in a one-win rookie season, and he actually missed the game that they won in Dallas, so he was winless as a rookie and got beat up. So it's almost like the discussion we just had with Wentz. It's, yeah, we know it's a smaller school and that's a legit thing, but what do we say about it? We're only guessing at this point. That's kind of that way as well. Is it build character to get your face beat in as a rookie? Because some guys it has. Or does it ruin you forever? Some guys it has ruined them forever. So I don't know the answer to that. My guess You've got Josh McCown there, though, so you can truly play the best QB you have, assuming McCown will still be there. You don't have to rush Goff out because you've got a decent veteran bridge guy to put in there if you want. So I think they're in a pretty safe spot in that regard for the Browns.
Andy, they have Robert Griffin III there.
Yeah, I know. Do we really need to discuss this?
Let's do a 45-minute sidebar on RG3.
It'll give us an extra 10,000 listeners, so we might as well.
So I guess, I don't know, I'd be terrified to put Jared Goff out there in behind that line. I mean, you got Joe Thomas, but, you know, you're going to have a new center. You're going to have a new right tackle. Petonio could play. Other than that, you know, I don't know. I'd be terrified. I believe I called this in a previous episode the Blaine Gabberding of the next quarterback in Cleveland. I think I'd just have Jared Goff on the sideline and you know, just tell him, dude, once we build this thing up a little bit more, we'll put you out on the field. But it seems dangerous. I mean, even look at their, you know, Travis Benjamin is gone. They essentially have they have Hartline, Barnage.
Right. Because Josh Gordon got suspended again. So, I guess we'll know in August, but Josh Gordon can't be counted on at this point. So, they're very weak at wide receiver. I mean, we know the Browns have immense problems, and we're not even talking about the front office and ownership and head coach and the triangle of a relationship there, which I think is not nearly going to be good and is not as good as people would guess even at this early stage. So if I'm Goff, honestly, I would want to, and you don't have the leverage now because the number one pick just went to the Rams. Maybe you still do. I would consider pulling an Eli Manning to the Chargers thing here and saying, I'm not going to play for you guys.
Yeah.
But that's another discussion. If he's on the roster, then if he does join him, certainly you're not going to do that. You're going to go on the field if they ask you to. I'll say this, because I think it's guessing to say, well, is he going to get beat around and will that hurt or help him? The evidence suggests he'd be okay with that because Gabbert, for example, played in a spread system at Mizzou and never got hit. And that was the problem with him is nobody knew what kind of pro he'd be because he played from a clean pocket in college, and that doesn't happen in the NFL. Goff, even though they were in a spread system a lot of the time, air raid, he still had to play within the pocket and move in the pocket and show that he can sidestep defenders and keep eyes downfield. And I thought he was excellent at that, really, really good at it. So, and he's taken the beating as a freshman. So I wouldn't be as worried about him out there, but I'm not confident in anything that's going on with the Browns these days in the bigger scheme of things.
Well, for me, the one plus with playing for the Browns is you do get to play for Hugh Jackson, who, you know, he built quite an offense in Cincinnati with Andy Dalton, who was a, you know, second tier quarterback prospect coming out a couple years back. And I mean, they moved the ball with AJ McCarron a little bit last year, which is I think sort of surprised all of us. So if you're Goff, I don't know, it's not all bad. there's some long-term hope, I guess. You know, once they, and the front office has to have some kind of plan. I mean, they couldn't have, right? They couldn't have just, you know, gone in there and said, like, hey, Jimmy Haslam, you saw Moneyball, right? Let's do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the plan is. When I say it's a matter of how much will analytics drive final decisions that are made? And I don't know the answer to that. They haven't been very clear on that. So I can't tell you. If analytics are driving the final decisions, that will not go well, and the coaching staff will absolutely hate it. I can guarantee that.
Yeah. All right, so we are giving Jared Goff to the Cleveland Browns, or we, as the Cleveland Browns, will draft Jared Goff. I have one more thing to say about Jared Goff. I was editing your Jared Goff piece last week, and he's exceptionally handsome, and I'm very comfortable with where I sit on the Kinsey scale. But I had to call my wife over and just be like, Liz, look at this dude. That's a really good looking dude.
It's funny you say that because I got an email and I woke up in the morning and it had been sent in the middle of the night from my mother who couldn't sleep. And so she went down to read my MMQB article to like probably presumably try to put her to sleep. And she sent me a special email about she called him cute, how he's cute. But she's out of a different generation, too. So she can say he's cute because he probably looks like he's 4 years old to her.
Yeah.
My mom's in her early 60s.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's interesting you would bring that up because my mom made a special comment on that. And that's the only comment I've heard about my work other than my Super Bowl article from anyone in my family all year long is how cute Jared Goff was.
No, I'm just saying, give me Jared Goff, Jimmy Garoppolo, and an auto tuner, and I will make the next great boy band. I just need those two, and I'll fill them out. Whoever you and I can be, you know, two of the other five. It doesn't matter. Just those two dudes. Right. We'll sell it. We'll sell it. With that, we will move on to the number three pick, the San Diego Chargers, who I guess they. Everyone picking behind the top two here has to be, except for maybe the Eagles or anyone who was interested in a quarterback, they have to be pretty psyched that the Rams jumped up and you know, one of these non-quarterbacks slides down and that sort of helps everyone out. The Chargers, you know, obviously you have Phillip Rivers. I don't think they would really be, they shouldn't be looking for their next quarterback yet, should they?
No, I don't. I mean, Phillip Rivers is... I think he's 34 years old and he's been healthy and he's played in the league 12 years, but he didn't play the first few of those years. So he doesn't have as much wear and tear on him. So yeah, he's 34. So I know. Yeah. Rivers is still in the prime of his career. In my opinion, he's on the back half of the prime, but that's the prime, not the back half of his career.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's so tough to get a read on this team from last season just because they were, I mean, everyone was hurt. They were running out guys. I don't know. I think they were just going out to San Diego Zoo and just pulling people in and plugging them on the offensive line or receiver. They had too many injuries too. You know, there's something to be said for next man up eventually just expires. It just runs out. You run out of next men. But when you look at this roster, realistically, what should they be targeting?
Well, I think they need – I don't think you do it with the third pick, but they need a replacement for Gates down the road, and Ladarius Green is gone now, so they could use a second tight end to have a flex type of offense for the immediate future. Wide receiver, I think if everyone's healthy, they're a little better there than we realize, and they got Travis Benjamin. Offensive line, if everyone's healthy at wide receiver, you don't need a dynamic offensive line in that system because the system's designed to get the ball out so quickly.
Okay.
And the Chargers know that. That's why they signed King Dunlap. I mean, King Dunlap's not an elite left tackle.
Yeah.
But San Diego's been comfortable doing that and playing with him. So I would look to defense if I'm San Diego. A lot of people probably have Jalen Ramsey going there. I don't think there's room for him. You signed Casey Hayward. Brandon Flowers is still a flexible inside and outside man press corner. Mm-hmm. Jason Verrett's a top 10 corner. Nobody talks about him. So I would find a guy I could rush the passer with and a flexible, movable piece because they like to do a lot of disguises. And if they've got these corners and these guys are man-to-man corners, and that's important because man-to-man is what you play when you blitz a lot of the time. So I think they want to expand their blitz concepts, and a guy who could be a movable chess piece to help them do that, to me, would be the right solution.
Interesting. Because I think a lot of people are thinking Laremy Tunsil, the man who would be number one or presumed to be number one if the Titans had kept the top pick. Joey Bosa? Is that what we're looking at here? I think he's a guy who can fit as that, you know, stand-up, outside, rush, you know, rush linebacker type of athlete.
Yeah, I think that is who you're looking at because stylistically, he does answer the call, and they also need a defensive end to play opposite Corey Legit, a 3-4 flex defensive end, and a guy that can put his hand in the dirt on first and second down. But I think Bosa could potentially fill that type. I haven't watched Bosa, but I know the concept of him. I know what kind of player he projects to be stylistically. So I think he would fit that kind of demand.
All right. Let's just do it then. Let's give them Joey Bosa. So the Chargers with the number three pick go Joey Bosa. You know, some I guess it'll be team by team how they judge his off the field concerns. He had the pot suspension, but let's just say the Chargers are going to roll the dice and take Joey Bosa, the top edge rusher in the draft, third overall, which brings us to the Dallas Cowboys. And I'll start with a hypothetical just because, I don't know, feels like something that in the event it has to be addressed, it will be very interesting. Let's say the Browns do something crazy and don't take their quarterback and just take, I don't know, they take Tunzel and whoever because they're going to trade Joe Thomas this year or something like that. If Goff or Wentz, if one of the quarterbacks are on the board, do the Cowboys, who probably think they can win now and probably can win that NFC East with a healthy Tony Romo, they'd probably even be the favorite, I would think, if Romo played 16 games. Do they take one of the quarterbacks?
I would absolutely. Yeah. More so because of who the quarterback is. I think Goff and Wentz are both, nobody's a sure thing, but I think they're both very safe picks for franchise top of the first round type quarterbacks. Romo's 36, and unlike Rivers, he has been banged up. We know that. And you got a chance to find a replacement for him. You still have a roster that can win now. I mean, this team was 12-4 and almost in the NFC Championship 2 years ago with basically the same collection of players. Last season was an aberration because of the injuries. So I would do that. Now, I don't think that's going to be the case, though, because I don't think those quarterbacks – If Cleveland does do something crazy, I would think they would trade the pick and then do their crazy thing after trading the pick. So
or the Chargers.
Someone's going to get Goff at number two in my mind, or Wentz or whoever the second QB is.
All right, so we'll take that scenario off the board, and if you're Dallas, I mean, reasonably, you're the top three prospects on the board. You have Tunzel, who you're presumably not going to take because you have the best offensive line in football. Best offensive line in football, Andy?
Without question. It didn't play to that level last year. They need to perform better, and I wonder if losing Bill Callahan as their line coach hurt them.
Yeah.
But talent-wise, yeah, this is without question the best offensive line in football.
So I think you're probably looking at Jalen Ramsey. You know what? Let's come back to Jalen Ramsey. You're looking at DeForest Buckner as sort of a jack of all trades, play him across the line. I think Buckner's athletic enough that you can, you know, with his size, athleticism combination, you can sort of mold him into whatever you want him to be on your line. Yeah, Miles
kind of like what they wanted from Greg Hardy, but never fully got. He could be Greg Hardy without the awful human being label attached to him.
Without being Greg Hardy.
Yeah. We need the next Greg Hardy who isn't Greg Hardy.
Exactly.
That's really what every team is about in the NFL these days.
Exactly. You have Miles Jack, the just obscenely athletic middle linebacker, could probably cover as well as a lot of safeties in this league. And the third guy you have is Ramsey, who in most people's minds is the best non-quarterback in this draft. To me, when I look at Ramsey, and I know some people say, is he a corner? Is he the next Patrick Peterson? Is he a safety? I actually see him as a similar player, and I think you can make him into what you want him to be, but I think he's a similar player to Byron Jones. Yeah. As a guy who can, you know, play him inside, he'll cover tight ends, and you know, can sort of be that Swiss Army knife for your secondary.
And if that's the case, and I don't know anything about Jalen Ramsey, but let's say he is the next Byron Jones as a style of player, mm-hmm. That's a fascinating discussion about whether you go get him if you're Dallas or not. Because Byron Jones is absolutely, as an entity, he's valuable enough to take in the top five. He was taken low in the first round last year, but if he becomes what he appears on track to become, he's worth a top five draft pick. A guy that can cover top-end wide receivers and a tight end. He covered Rob Gronkowski very well man-to-man when they played him in week six, for example.
Yeah.
There aren't two or three. There might not be a single other guy in the league who can do that. Not tight ends like that and wide receivers. And not to mention play zone coverage and play in space if you want to not play man-to-man. So the question then becomes, is Byron Jones, do you need two of those guys? How important is it? Because not many teams have two superstar level tight ends or two big time receiving tight ends.
Yeah.
And like New England does, but Dallas doesn't play them for four more years. So it's a fascinating discussion of just, I think safeties are the least or the most undervalued position in the league right now, because there aren't even close to enough safeties who can match the tight ends talent wise and size wise. So to have two guys that could offset that would be unique. But maybe your money is better spent elsewhere because Jones can handle the biggest heavy load and we need a pass rusher. I don't know how they view that.
Interesting. And you know why Byron Jones doesn't get respect? Because no one respects the University of Connecticut. You got to recognize the University of Connecticut, UConn, is playing great football. That's
Are they really?
There. They're playing pretty good football.
Do they have like the most dominant women's football team of all time?
Oh.
Are they ruining women's football for everybody?
Yeah. They're beating everyone by 70. No, they, only team that beat Houston last year. That would be UConn. They're good. They're on the rise again, I guess, since the days of Dan Orlowski. Okay, so let's say they're going to pass on Ramsey. So you're probably looking at...
I think they take Buckner, don't you, if they do that?
You think so? So Buckner most likely, probably his most natural position is...
Or his ilk, I guess. I don't know the rest of the DMs the way you do. Are there other guys up there? I mean, I like Kevin Dodd. You don't think he'll go top 10, I know, or top 5 even. Who else is available at that position?
I really like Kevin Dodd. And we'll talk about Kevin Dodd later in this episode, as a matter of fact, I believe. But I don't think there's an edge rusher. With the number 4 pick, I just don't think there's another edge rusher who you can take that high. I think when you're picking 4, you just got to make sure you get, as they say, and I just made this phrase up, the best player available. I don't know if you ever heard that phrasing before when it comes to the draft.
Yeah, I hate it when teams say that they do that. Almost nobody does that. Almost nobody does that.
Yeah, yeah.
The only team that can do that this year is Green Bay, because if you look at their roster, they don't have a single need at all. Other than that, though, the best player available, what you really mean is the best player available to you, the best player for you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm going to let's go ahead and give him Buckner. I honestly think, and people might disagree with me, and this is my very unprofessional opinion, I think Buckner is enough of a just rare human specimen. If you want to have him slim down and play the edge, I think you can do that. I think you do that in their 4-3. I think he can be a Greg Hardy type guy. Could be completely wrong, but
Greg Hardy type player, you mean? Let's say that.
Yeah. Yes, player on the field.
Sorry, Mr. Buckner.
Yes, yes, he should be fine. Otherwise, as far as I know. So there we go. So recapping the top 4 real quick here. Rams take Carson Wentz, Browns Jared Goff, the Chargers go Joey Bosa, and the Dallas Cowboys take the high upside DeForest Buckner. We're going to come back in 30 seconds. We'll have the Jaguars, the Ravens, Niners, Eagles, Tampa, Giants. We're going to figure this thing out. Baseball season is underway, and it's time to get in the game. This year, you can be more than a fan. You can run your own team at FanDuel. It's the most fun you can have as a baseball fan. FanDuel isn't just for the stat experts. FanDuel is for the every fan, from the casual players to the hardcore seam heads. Set up a listener league with your friends, or play to win cash from fans around the world. Entry fees start at just $1, and there's no season-long commitment. Play for one day or the rest of the season plus playoffs. And here's the best part. FanDuel is giving new players their first game risk-free. Just go to FanDuel.com and enter the code THEMMQB. Then enter a FanDuel league or start one with one of your friends. If you don't win any prize in your first contest, you get that $10 right back in your FanDuel account for more play. That's FanDuel.com with my code THEMMQB. For a risk-free tournament at up to $10. All right, Andy. We're moving, east from Dallas. and the South. I really don't know my geography, is what I just learned. Jacksonville. Jacksonville is up next. They're really, I mean, they're stocking up quickly. You know, Malik Jackson comes in now with free agency. Dante Fowler, one of the, I think there were three first-round picks last year who never saw the field during the regular season. Dante Fowler, yeah, of course, in just absurdly unlucky fashion, tears his ACL in the first day of OTAs. They'll have him coming back, hopefully at near 100%. But the Jaguars, I mean, they've restocked again. When you look at this roster, what are their needs?
They don't have a lot of pressing needs. The Jaguars are a good, talented, young team. Their offense, I think, is really good, and coaches around the NFL privately or amongst themselves marvel at this offense and the potential because they like Blake Bortles. I think T.J. Yeldon can be a big-time running back, and he's going to have help with Chris Ivory now, and they've got big, long wide receivers. The offensive line could use some help, but they addressed that with Kelvin Beachum, who I think will beat out Luke Jokel at left tackle.
Okay.
A.J. Can was better for them as a guard last year. Luke Bowonko, third-year center. They've gotten a little bit better on the inside O-line. Maybe they take a lineman because if there's a really good one there, that could probably solidify a lot of other spots and eliminate some of the hint of question mark we have here.
Yeah.
But I think, Gary, the position, and tell me if there's even – if it's possible, but I think if they can find another edge rusher, because Fowler's one, Malik Jackson, you have to count him as a three technique in pass rushing scenarios because,
yep,
he's so good at tackle, and that's what got him paid. If they could find one more guy to bend the edge, they want to be a straight 4-3 Seahawks type zone defense. And to do that, you need to have pass rushers. So I think that would put this defense over the top.
We're looking at in my mind, Kevin Dodd is a worthwhile top 10 pick, and he's, to me, clearly the best edge rusher on the board. At this point, it's tough, though. It's tough for this reason, and I hate to just sort of, you know, lump myself in with everyone who was speculating a week ago that the Titans were coming down to is either going to be Jalen Ramsey or Laremy Tunsil. And when we're sitting here at five in our mock draft here with the Jaguars, you're looking at those two guys are still on the board. Ramsey is a guy, I think you could have him slim down, and you know, there are people who think he's another Patrick Peterson in 2 or 3 years. Tunsil, obviously, you're talking about the best, best left tackle in the draft. He's a guy who could have gone number one overall, and no one would have blinked an eye about it. Yeah,
but
so,
I don't know where
so
you play him there in Jacksonville. I mean, because
exactly,
they signed Jeremy Parnell to big money. So in order to get, and that was last year, I believe, or maybe the year before, but they brought him in free agency. So to get Tunsil, the same people that spent money on Parnell would now have to abandon him. So you'd be doing kind of an about face. And keep in mind, everyone's coaching and drafting for their jobs this year, most likely, in,
yeah,
Jacksonville. Because I don't think Shad Khan's going to go for another 6-10 type season.
And you're not ready to give up on Luke Jokel.
No, I think you absolutely give up on Luke Jokel. He's been,
oh yeah,
he's been worse. He's been closer to bad than good in the NFL. But I think Kelvin Beachum's a guy they signed him this year. I think he's going to be
right,
your left
they got
tackle.
Beachum. You said that 2 minutes ago, and I already forgot. I need
that's all right. I mean, Beachum's easy to forget about because on these depth charts, he's actually second technically because they're calling it a competition. That's not going to be a competition
well,
in Jacksonville.
Yeah,
Kelvin
he's
Beachum
also,
will beat out Luke Jokel, left tackle.
He's also coming off the ACL. I love Kelvin Beachum. I think he's I think he was a great addition for them. And apparently, I don't know. I filed it somewhere and lost it in the depths of my mind.
Your point about Ramsey is an interesting one because we know they like lengthy cornerbacks in that scheme. We've seen the success those guys have had. And I think the coach will tell you that ball tracking ability is actually the most important trait for a corner, and they cover three press scheme like what Seattle runs and like what Atlanta and Jacksonville run as well. Right next to ball tracking is length and physicality,
yeah,
that Richard Sherman factor. And Ramsey's long. He's 6'1", and his arms extend down, you know, well past his mid-thigh. So maybe they do fall in love with him as a prospect. They signed Prince Amukamara, but that was a one-year deal. You know, they could they didn't know Ramsey would be available when they signed Amukamara because they didn't know the Rams were trading up for the number one pick and the domino effect would fall. So I wouldn't have a problem if they took Jalen Ramsey with this pick. If he's a better corner than there are defensive ends available.
Yeah. I just think Dodd is too much of a reach here. I think as your director of scouting, I bang the table and then say we got to take Jalen Ramsey here.
All right.
So let's do it. Jaguars take Jalen Ramsey. So Rams get Wentz, Jared Goff to the Browns, Joey Bosa to the Chargers, DeForest Buckner to the Cowboys, and now Jalen Ramsey to the Jaguars. Baltimore Ravens. Not normally picking in the top 10. Some people on our staff thought they would be Super Bowl champions last year.
Greg Bedard thought that. Peter thought that. I thought that.
Yep. Which is why everyone on our staff loves making preseason predictions.
Yeah. And you know what? 2 years ago, for the first time in as long as I can remember, I got all four Final Four teams correctly, and so did Emily Kaplan. And the only people who said anything about it was Emily Kaplan and myself. Nobody noticed. Nobody noticed. We had all four teams correct.
You're just supposed to get them right.
Yeah, you know, it's true. We're supposed to know. We're supposed to know.
It's like you're a couple of left tackles, and then you kept the quarterback clean, and it's like, yeah, of course you did. That was your job. But
right.
You let someone get through, and it's all anyone wants to talk about. So the Ravens, weird team to be picking this high. They obviously have some good pieces in place, coming off a nightmare season. What's Baltimore looking for here?
Baltimore's moving. Nobody knows this, or at least I haven't heard it reported, but they're moving to a 4-3 this year, and they're going to play a lot more 4-3. That's why they hired Joe Colan, a longtime Lions D-line coach, and most recently the Buccaneers D-line coach there in those Lovie Smith-type gap-shooting 4-3 zone schemes. They won't be a cover 2 defense like that, but they're going to have a lot of those principles along their defensive front. And so because of that, they've got a tremendous nose shade, probably the best in the league, and Brandon Williams, their fourth-year player. Timmy Jernigan is on the rise, and I think he'll be a very good fit as a 3 technique. But you need some other guys around them. You need guys to rotate with them or guys to play outside of them because Dumervil's a pass rushing specialist at this point. Suggs is coming off the Achilles. I wouldn't bet against Suggs. I've learned not to do that over the years. But it's, even if he's healthy, and that's an if, you still need at least one other guy up there with them. So can we take a defensive end now, Gary, or are you still not sold on the guys available?
The only thing I'll say about Dodd is I think – you end up with another guy who, at least early in his career, I don't know if he's a guy who you play early downs. I don't think he necessarily complements Dumervil. And obviously, I don't think there's any guarantee with what you get from
Suggs. I disagree with that because I think Dodd is a lot like Michael Bennett for the Seahawks. I think he can play defensive end on first down and then play D-tackle on second and 10 or certainly third downs. You know, passing downs. And to me, that's a big compliment because Dumervil's the defensive end. I think he would fit real well like that.
You think so?
Oh, definitely. I think that's how NFL teams will see him too. A lot of comparisons I hear are Michael Bennett, and that makes sense stylistically.
Hmm.
Do you see him as a pure edge burner?
I think he's more of a, I think he's a, I think early in his career, he's a guy who's just going to just go straight into the backfield and just be a a pass rush threat. I'm not sure where he is. I always saw Shaq Lawson as sort of the guy who's going to set the edge a little bit more effectively. I don't love Lawson as much as I love Dodd.
Well, and I agree with you, because I did the film room thing with both of them as well. We're going to release that in a few weeks. So I watched film with Dodd on my left and Lawson on my right, and I like them both. I like them both personally. Dodd is the more NFL-ready of the two, even though he was a kind of, they say he's a one-year wonder at Clemson. He is technically sound, and he understands the game. He'll contribute more effectively out of the gates than Lawson will. Lawson has a more of a learning curve. Lawson's 3 years younger than him too.
Boy, that makes it interesting. I mean,
see, I think if they weren't going to this 4-3, and maybe they decide we'll still be a hybrid flex front seven. Dean Pease is still the D coordinator, but I think. Mm-hmm. They're going to a 4-3. They're not going to decide that. If they weren't, then like Lawson would make sense because a lot of people think he can be a Courtney Upshaw type, and they just had Courtney Upshaw and they chose not to re-sign him, which is a smart move. But I think they need a D lineman. Are there any good linebackers in this draft? Because that's the other position they need. They got CJ Mosley and then nobody else around him really. Unless they feel Arthur Brown can break out, which he's entering his fourth season now, and it hasn't happened yet.
I mean, you have Miles Jack, who, you know, I mean, would you pair those two guys together? I mean, Jack is a ridiculously athletic. I mean, he's a guy who he covers like a safety. He's a special player, but I mean, do you invest? What would that be? Two first round picks in a 3 year span at linebacker,
line of scrimmage linebackers. If one of them can cover really well, you could, because you need two linebackers play. That's what it is. You got two in nickel and they are stack backers. Mm-hmm. And I think you could argue linebackers are more important now, even though they play fewer of them play because of all the three receiver sets. The ones who are on the field have more responsibilities because the run defense is harder out against those three receiver sets a lot of the time, where it can be. You've got to account for pass and coverage and all that stuff. So if Jack can be a flexible cover guy, they're not great at safety in Baltimore. So they need someone to cover tight ends. And if they think Jack can do that as linebacker, pairing him with CJ Mosley, remember how valuable it was when Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman were together. Their big value was that they could cover the running back and tight end and man-to-man, and that allowed the Niners to play a lot more nickel than usual. So I wouldn't have a problem if they felt that way about Miles Jack.
Ooh. It's an interesting spot then. So what would their linebacker core look like? So let's pencil in Jack, and I'll have the eraser ready, but so they'd have what? Mosley, if they're going to play a lot of base 4-3, yeah, Mosley and Jack, and are we assuming they're going to play a lot of 5?
I think that's it. I think a base 4-3 is a base 4-2 now, because 4-2, they're going to be a nickel, because that's what teams are going to play. Teams will go 3 wide against them. Everybody does that. I mean, who's in their division? I guess it's Cleveland and Cincinnati, so maybe that's more traditional, but Pittsburgh will be a 3 wide receiver offense.
Yeah.
I think you need two linebackers in today's NFL, and if you have a third one, that's great. But like in their case, they have a guy like Zach Orr, a backup guy, a fringe backup guy. I think he suffices. I think he's good enough as a number 3 linebacker.
All right. Yeah, let's do it then.
Miles Jack.
Yeah, I as much as I like Kevin Dodd, let's just say they're going to take the high ceiling linebacker. They'll take Jack and pair him with Mosley, and that'll be something there.
You know what's interesting? What we're talking about, a lot of teams are needing defensive ends in this draft, and I did the team needs thing this week for each guy, each team that will run on MMQB next week. So I've been thinking about this, and I felt like every team I was writing about, I was saying they need either a defensive end or an interior offensive lineman. Yeah. And we don't have a lot of good ones. We don't have a huge quantity of good or great ones at the top of the draft this year. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of trades in the first round, just because the team needs do not match the talent pool in a lot of positions in this year's draft.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I feel like we've said that a lot of years, expect the, expect a lot of trades in the first round. I think this is a year where it there's actual logic behind it, and it's something we should see. Maybe we won't see it because it doesn't always pan out, but I think we are going to see a lot of shuffling in the first round here, because like you said, it's heavy on defensive tackles this year, short on the edge guys, short on the interior guys on the offensive side of the line, and it's it's going to be a pretty, I think it's going to be a pretty wild first night.
Yeah.
So Ravens take Miles Jack. We are on to San Francisco. Obviously they're in our scenario missing out on the two quarterbacks. What does Chip Kelly need?
Well, there's one that really needs interior offensive line. And
yeah,
as we just said, they might not do that at the top of the first round, but it's still worth talking about because in Kelly's scheme, mobility and athleticism at guard and center is more important in that scheme than in any scheme in the NFL because they do so many sweeps and boundary runs, and they do them out of unusual formations and with unusual zone blocking concepts or pulling blockers. And it's the Jason Kelce thing. You know, Jason Kelce was a big reason before he didn't play well last year and their running game dried up. He played really well the few years before that, and their running game was highly productive. You need a Jason Kelce type of guy in the middle of the O-line, and San Francisco last season was killed by their interior O-line because they had no one to play right guard. The center was an average position, and now this year they've lost Boone, so they're even weaker at their other guard position at left guard. So they need three new interior linemen. They signed Zane Beatles. I don't think that counts for enough. They need three new interior offensive linemen there.
You got, I mean, look, like we said, interior line, there are no, you know, you're talking Cody Whitehair, who is a tackle at Kansas State, might be the top guy on the board. Certainly not a top 10 prospect. Laramie Tunzel, still on the board here, as well as Ronnie Stanley. Yeah. I mean,
they could do that. I mean, they need a tackle as well. Joe Staley is not a spring chicken, as they say. He's 31. He'll be 32 when the season starts, and he's starting to show a little bit. And they're weak at right tackle, assuming that we don't know what to get from Anthony Davis, which I don't think they know what to expect there.
I think they'd love to unload him, too, from all the reports coming out. All right. Let's give the Niners Laramie Tunzel and you know, he'll play right tackle early, take over for Staley in a year or two, and you know, they'll do what they can do on this offensive line as far as the interior goes. But they're probably still what do you think? They're a year or two away from making any kind of push, assuming everything goes according to plan.
No question.
All right, we're on to Philadelphia. Everyone was connecting the Eagles to Wentz, and you know they I think Ian Rapoport had, or no, maybe it wasn't Rapoport. Someone had reported that the Eagles were in the running for that number one overall pick as well, and that's what sort of drove the price up. And I'll have to look up who that was.
That's why I don't Eagles do reporting, by the way, because I don't think people actually remember who broke the news. Reporters care, but I don't think anyone else does.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to get
sorry,
an angry,
Peter King.
I'm going to get an angry letter from someone. But the Eagles, they're missing out on the top quarterbacks. Assuming they don't take Paxton Lynch here, or maybe they would trade down and get him, but since they've already traded up, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But outside of quarterback, what should the Eagles be looking at?
Oh, that's a good question. Boy, you know, it's interesting because they don't have a ton of needs on defense. For a team that was not good defensively, they don't have a ton of needs. They could use another corner or so. I mean, they signed some guys from Buffalo, McKelvin and Brooks, for depth, but that's not changing the definition of your franchise, certainly. But they have pass rushers. They're athletic at inside linebacker with Jordan Hicks and Michael Kendricks. Their D-line's phenomenal. So now we go back to the offensive side of the ball. When Chip Kelly made the moves he made last year, almost all of them decreased the team's speed. He did not value speedy players. Mm. And we saw that most at wide receiver. And they got rid of DeSean Jackson a few years ago, and then it was Jeremy Maclin was gone. And in those guys' plays are Jordan Matthews and Nelson Aguilar, who run just barely better than you and I run, Gary. So while that doesn't mean they can't play, they don't run well. And that limits the offense when you have multiple guys like that. This was a slow offense last year. So if they could find some speed somewhere, and if they don't feel it's that wide receiver, then I don't know what you do. Maybe look at a running back or something. They need speed, though, in the passing game. They need someone with wheels to catch footballs.
I think you're out of luck if you're looking for speed at receiver. Laquon Treadwell is probably the top prospect on the board. He is absolutely not a speed guy, as was discussed ad nauseum during the combine and lead up to his pro day. Corey Coleman can run. The problem is he comes from that Baylor offense where, you know, he's going to take a little while to basically learn how to run more than straightforward or just catch screens and run through guys. He's got some drop problems, though. It seems like it's correctable. Will Fuller, another guy, runs well, doesn't catch the ball particularly well. I think he's a pretty big stretch for the top 10. Anywhere else you would look on this roster? I mean, Byron Maxwell is gone. I know they're pretty set with a pass rush. How's their secondary shaping up, though?
Yeah, they could go there. I mean, Eric Rowe showed decent signs, but he didn't once he got on the field, but he didn't get on the field early on, and that was a little concerning because they didn't have a lot of other guys beating him out. And then Nolan Carroll, I thought Nolan Carroll next to Josh Norman, I thought he was the most improved corner in the NFL when you compare him to where he was at the very beginning of his career. He was a liability in Miami, and he became an excellent cover corner at times for Philadelphia last year, but he got hurt. So he's coming off an injury, and who knows how that impacts you. They could use a cornerback here, but I don't think if they went with Rowe and Carroll as their week one starters, I don't think that would be alarming either, especially when you factor in that they've got Malcolm Jenkins, who can play man-to-man coverage as a converted corner turn safety, and they signed Rodney McLeod, who is a top five free safety.
The other guy, a lot of people are connecting him. I mean, there's so much noise about it, is Ezekiel Elliott, the running back. It's one of those so much noise that it seems to be a obvious misdirection smokescreen. I don't know. Do they, after the DeMarco Murray debacle, do they go with another running back here? Do they invest big in another running back? I mean, Elliott's fantastic, but
I like Ryan Matthews. Ryan Matthews is a good runner. Now, does he stay healthy is the concern, and at times he hasn't done the little things right. He's fumbled. His pass protection has been spotty at times in his career. But as just a runner of the football, Ryan Matthews is a top six or seven NFL runner. So I like him, but maybe they don't feel he can be the every down back they want. And if that's the case, and maybe you take someone else, Darren Sproles is their gadget player, so they probably don't view him as their number two running back.
All right, I'll give you the three names who I'd pencil in here. I mean, top guy on the board might be Ronnie Stanley, the tackle from Notre Dame. I don't know if
you and maybe try and you shuffle do that. Jason Peters has age is starting to catch up to Jason Peters. I mean, he's 34 years old, and he got hurt a lot last year and in other years. So
now,
and I know Lane Johnson's going to be their left tackle, though, but it's not the worst thing to play Lane Johnson at right tackle long-term either.
Okay. And the other guy, Vernon Hargreaves, is the corner. So I don't know. We can go Stanley and sort of shore up the long-term future on the offensive line, or you go Elliott and you get your three-down feature back who can certainly take a lot of that pass protection and receiving workload off of Ryan Matthews' plate.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say, just because we're kind of trying to guess here, I guess. Doug Peterson comes from the Andy Reid school. He's worked under Reid a long time. He's going to do what Andy Reid did. Andy Reid's philosophy, he would go in and sit down at the owner's desk or GM's desk and say, I need a serviceable quarterback. I need someone who can block for him, a left tackle, so to speak. I need one pass rusher and two cornerbacks, and I'll figure the rest out. So if you give me those pieces, I'll figure it all out. So maybe if we were to take that puzzle, if Peterson adopts that idea, then maybe they do go cornerback. It's all right. Just pick a guy. This is a mock. Come on. We don't have to be precise.
Come on, Andy. All right, let's give him the cornerback then. Let's give him Vernon Hargreaves, who you know, he's a quick twitch guy. He can sort of face the action, and you know, if you're gonna have Vinnie Curry wreaking some havoc a little more often this year, along with Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham, I think he makes sense as a guy who can cause some turnovers here.
All right.
So Vernon Hargreaves to the Eagles, which brings us to Tampa. What are the Bucs looking for?
Kind of what we've been talking about. They need secondary help, and they could use a pass rusher. And of those two things, they're more of a zone type defense. They won't be what they were under Lovie Smith as a pure zone, I'm sure, but a pure zone every single snap, it felt like. Mike Smith's now their D coordinator, though. They're still going to play plenty of zone coverage. So defensive line's more important than secondary if you're a zone-based defense. I think you take the defense. I think this is where Dodd goes.
Yeah. So you spent time with Dodd as well. What were your impressions of him? So you think he's a Michael Bennett type guy?
Yeah, I do. I think there's a lot to like. I think he's going to be an excellent pro. He's long-armed, strong, just bigger than his listed size, and he can play inside or outside. I mean that as an attacker. He hasn't played a lot of three technique, but as his watching him on film and the moves he has and the way he approaches the game, he's very good attacking to the inside or off the edge.
Boy, I'm always shocked. You know, I look around at a lot of people projecting him at the end of the first round, and I'd be stunned if he doesn't go top half. I'm not saying he'll necessarily go top 10, but I can't believe he'd slip out of the top 15 or 16 picks of this draft. So let's go ahead and do it. Let's give Kevin Dodd to the Bucs.
All right.
And our last pick of segment one here, we had Wentz to the Rams, Goff to the Browns, Bosa to the Chargers, DeForest Buckner to the Cowboys, Jalen Ramsey to Jacksonville, the Ravens take Miles Jack, Niners take Laremy Tunsil, Eagles take Vernon Hargreaves, and the Bucs take Kevin Dodd. Brings us to the Giants. Obviously, big spenders in free agencies, short up a lot of problems on that defense. What else should they be looking for right now?
Well, they still have some problems to shore up. Safety, they don't have anyone that can cover. Cooper Taylor and Landon Collins are box safety type guys with severe limitations in pass coverage. And the more space they have around them, the worse they get. So
isn't Landon Collins isn't he a linebacker? I mean, don't you just move him to linebacker at this point?
Landon Collins?
Yeah.
You might. If you want to be a dime team and play three safeties and three corners like more teams are doing, like the Rams did last year, like the Cardinals have done with Dale and Buchanan, that might be the right fit for Collins. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that, if that's the case, you're going to need two safeties, though.
Yeah.
I mean, so I think safety is the position here. I don't know if there's first round guys worth it, guys that would demand that kind of thing, but if we're just talking team needs, without question, safety is the weak spot of this entire roster, and that will be a problem for the way that Steve Spagnuolo wants to play.
You're probably not getting a safety here. I mean, they have to jump up. Jalen Ramsey, if you think he's a safety, is your only surefire first rounder. I mean, you're set at defensive end for the most part. They shored up the defensive line. Linebacker, I mean, are you looking receiver or offensive line in the other side?
Yeah, they need the backers, but Jerry Reese doesn't value linebackers. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Look at his draft history. I don't think he's ever taken one in the first three rounds even.
Yeah. I mean, from a value standpoint, you got Ronnie Stanley is still on our board. Treadwell, do you want a sort of possession type guy?
Yeah, there's a good one. I like that. I would take Treadwell. That's the other need that they would have, because they need someone opposite Beckham, not to take attention from Beckham, because that's not going to go that way. He'll still get doubled, but to balance out. They do a lot of quick slants in that system, and a lot of slants with a lot of routes with a slant and a pattern to the flat. And the ideal of all these is the ball's out on 3 and 5 step timing, or in their case, it's 2 and 4 step timing.
All right.
Someone who can go over the middle is very valuable, and they need a tight end too. So any why that's relevant is tight ends also catch balls between the numbers. So anyone who they feel can catch passes between the field numbers, that could be their best solution in round one, and then you try to get the safety later.
All right. I mean, Treadwell's a bit of a stretch just because you're, you know, obviously you're talking about a guy who doesn't, you know, he doesn't run well. His time, speed are scaring people off. I think he can play. I think he's a, I have no problem making him a top 10 pick. I don't know if teams are going to be scared off, but I think it would come down to Treadwell or, you know, Ronnie Stanley's the other guy, or, you know, do you look at Ezekiel Elliott and add another guy to that, running back mix?
I would take Treadwell for the purposes of our mock draft, but from what I understand about Stanley and what I've heard about him, I would imagine someone will have traded up and taken him in the top 6 or 7. I don't think he'll still be on the board at pick 11. He is for our thing, and we're not going to amend it at this point in the podcast. But
there you go. It's the way it played out.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, it's, I don't know much about Stanley, but I know people still think highly of left tackles, and someone will probably try to go get him.
Okay. Well, we're going to give Laquon Treadwell to the Giants. They get their number two receiver here. No more Reuben Randles and Preston Parkers running around, and that offense becomes a lot scarier. More than a one man band there in the receiving core. So that's our top 10. We're going to come back next two episodes. We'll do 11 through 20. Then we will do 21 through 31 or 32 if the Patriots get those picks back, like Andy Gray here keeps on bugging me about. But yeah, that'll do it for segment one. Andy, I don't know. How do you feel about the mock?
I feel all right. These mock drafts take a while, you know. I mean, we're at hour 20 minutes. Part of me feels like, that's about how long the real first round will take. I would imagine. Maybe we need to put a 5-minute clock on our picks.
We took our full allotment for each pick. Now we'll mix it up next week. But you know, top 10, gotta devote some time here. That's going to be a wrap. Thanks as always to Alex Adnos, our producer, Jeff Irwin, our researcher, Andy Benoit. Great as always. I am Gary Gramling, and this was the MMQB podcast. See you next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.